October 9, 2020, it's a lot from Pedro's show. Watt for Pedro Show, happy Monday. No, it ain't. It's fucking Friday. Spacing. Quentin Quarantino mode has got me spacing. We're in Friday because This is a show that I just got together, people. I'm very fortunate to have with me from Glendale, Sprain, at the last minute, the Flenser cat. What's his name, the boss there? He said, yeah, you want to talk with him? And I said, fuck yeah. Because I had played some of your music. What's it called? Slant? A tune called Slant. And then, you know, the way things happen, fuck. And even though we were both SoCal music people, haven't got to share a stage with you yet. Anyway, I should tell the people we started off with, because the listeners probably don't know who the fuck I'm talking to April and Alex of Sprain. And we started the show off with Ole from John Coltrane, and then True Norwegian Black Metal. Love that title. You wouldn't want any of the fake shit, right? Like when your mob, like, rents a helicopter to break you out of prison because you killed the bass player. Oh, you're the bass, huh, April?
Yeah.
Okay, don't do that, Alex. Did you hear about that story about some band, the Cookie Monster bands, right? Well, the singers sound like Cookie Monsters. Black metal, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Are you talking about Mayhem?
Maybe it is. I thought it was a Norwegian name, but maybe you're right. I don't know. But the guy's ma got put in jail for trying to break him out or something.
Oh, that I
didn't know about that.
Yeah, the guy, there was some beef in the band, so they had to kill them.
Yeah, it seems like Norwegian bands have a thing about killing their band members.
Odin tradition or something. But yeah. Not all. There's a lot of fucking cool music out there and good people.
Yeah, and shit. Totally. Great people.
Yeah, I played there on the east side with the Oslo and in the west side with the Bergen. And in fact, my most north gig was in Tromso, but I think it's got the most north university. Like, it never got dark. It was in the summertime. So who wants to go? I want to go through you guys' music journey. So which one of you wants to go first?
Alex, go. You can go first.
My music journey?
Well, your journey. Let's start with the earliest musical recollection you have, please, Alex.
The earliest musical recollection I have is probably when I was really, really young, like 3 or 4. And my dad's a big fan of the Beatles and, you know, classics like Rolling Stones. And he would sit and he'd play these Beatles songs or Rolling Stones songs, but he'd change the lyrics and he'd make them funny, you know, funny for like a 4-year-old kid or whatever. So I think that's the first time I ever saw like someone play music. And then,
You mean he was playing the records and singing along, or was he playing a guitar or something?
Oh, he was like doing his own renditions. Like he was playing the guitar and singing along, but he would change the lyrics and he would make them funny and silly.
You're SoCal, so was this in SoCal?
No, I grew up in Boise, Idaho.
Boise, all right, good town. I play there almost every tour. People ask me, why are you always playing Boise? I say, look on a fucking map. right between the Northwest and Salt Lake City, right? It's the Oasis.
Yeah, it's the only place to play, really, out there in that area.
Yeah, but it's a good pad, and not far from there is Mountain Home. On the I-80 up there, and that's where Richard McKenna, who wrote The Sand Pebbles, me and Dee Boone's favorite movie. Okay, because I asked about SoCal because we had I came here when I was 9 from Virginia, but there was a guy named Dr. Demento, and he would play, you know, like Weird Al Yankovic. Like, he did that shit. He'd take a song and make up funny words, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you grew up in a pad then with musical instruments.
No, not necessarily. I mean, my dad had a guitar, and that was about it. I remember when I first started showing interest in music, my parents put me in, like, you know, like beginning classical piano lessons. And I didn't really like it because it wasn't really, like, the kind of music I was into. Like, when I started getting into music, I was into the, like, 60s psychedelic rock and stuff when I was really young. That's kind of, like, the first, like, real musical love I had.
Was this guitar acoustic that your pop had?
Yeah, he played acoustic guitar. He's never had an electric guitar. So that was always my thing.
Even though the piano was foisted on you, you just didn't hop on it anyway? You waited until you got an electric guitar?
Well, I stuck with the piano lessons for a while, and I got okay. Like, I can still play piano today pretty decently. I like playing the piano a lot more than I did back then now. But
Can I ask you, was it the teacher?
Yeah, it was definitely the teacher.
So many people I've had on the show, piano teachers, I don't know. Some are good, but like the majority of people are like, man, almost drove me away from music.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. I felt that way, but I had a great guitar teacher, Derek Myers, and he lived in Idaho when I lived there, and he taught me pretty much everything I know. And I had another teacher for piano when I was learning some kind of like jazz piano stuff, actually, when I was around in high school. Like, kind of went back to the piano after a while. And I played, I learned under this guy, Justin Nielsen, who still lives in Boise. And those two teachers had a pretty profound effect on, I guess, my musicianship and kind of shaped me.
A good one, a positive one, not a negative, like, lame one.
Yeah.
Now, could I ask you, you said school. Did you do anything in school, like the marching band or choir, shit like that?
I did choir. I remember I was a choir kid because I didn't want to do sports or anything. My parents were pushing me to do stuff, so I had to do, like, I didn't do, like, what, music? Because, you know, there's not, like, a whole lot of DIY things, like punk rock things going on in Boise. I mean, there were, but I wasn't really
associated. Yeah, there was a club because, who's that guy, Paul Revere? I think he was there, and he had a club that got turned into an all-ages club for a little while.
Yeah, are you talking about Paul Revere and the...
Yeah, the Raiders.
Yeah, and the Raiders. Yeah, that I don't think that club was a thing when I was growing up in Boise.
Okay. You know, yeah. I got to tell you, I did live for about 8 months in Idaho, Utapimp, Blackfoot, because there was a nuclear... My pop was an engine room guy with nuclear engine rooms, Navy, and they trained him there. And it was right next to a place called Atomic City, which was the first town lit up by a reactor. So this...
Wow.
This is early 60s, so a little before your time, too. So it just came to me. Okay, so what about the shit at school or after school? Well, you got the basement band, the garage band, or, bedroom band. Did you do that?
Yeah, that's what I really like to do. So I started doing that. I think my first, like, you know, silly garage band or whatever was when I was about 12 or 13, and I just kind of was hanging out with my friends, and we would just screw around and make noise. And I always wanted to write songs, and I was always, like, I took it a bit more seriously than the other people, and so... That kind of permeated the rest of my projects that happened in Boise, where I was like, all right, this is what we're doing. And I don't know, maybe I was like obsessed, or I took it maybe a little too seriously. And
but you were already writing your own songs, so you weren't just copying shit off records like me and D-Boone.
Well, I mean, I was definitely copying shit off records and calling it my own stuff.
You know? Oh, okay. Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I guess that's still what I'm doing
Jimmy
now.
Jimmy Page.
No, it wasn't that bad, but
look, everybody's got to start somewhere, and you know, but you had the good teachers too. So, but what I'm interested in is you did start writing. Did you have a little four track?
No, I never had a four track. I kind of missed that era. I'm only 22, so I kind of missed like the whole era where kids would grow up and they'd be like 15 years old and they get a four track and do that. I kind of regret missing it because that sounds cool, but I got an audio interface when I was young, about 15, and I started just like, you know, making like digital multi-track recordings kind of on my own.
It's kind of the same thing, but a little better.
Yeah.
A little more down the road, but it's same concept.
Yeah, it's the same thing. And I would just, you know, sit there and like overdub hundreds of guitar tracks or whatever, of me just playing like the guitar and just do weird audio experiments and stuff.
That's so great. That's so great. I want to play here, No One's Home.
Oh, She said, right there, I'll leave you down, rattled by the rain. All the streaks of oil on the street, tears to wash the stains. And the fires laugh at the moon, turning inward just like fools, unknowing of their doom. My coat and gloves to the floor, reeking of the day. The thrust of madness at the door, the bricks to block the rain. And the fires, they taunt the moon, such temporary fools, unknowing of their doom. And the fires, they taunt the moon, such temporary fools, unknowing of their doom.
in Kansas, the fundamentalists taught me that God made man in his own image and likeness. I hope he likes his dirty asshole.
With No One's Home, and after that, Will Johnson with Bricks to Block the Raid. Stein and Her Animals from Thor and Friends featuring Stein, Javen, Motlin. Charlie Plimal with Fundamentals. And finally, Bury the Mouse. Why do we spell it with a U? Guided by Voices. April, what's your earliest music recollection?
Mine's really funny. I'm half Filipino, so my mom's really into karaoke. So some of my earliest, like, musical memories are her singing, like, Dancing Queen and, like, Don't Cry for Me, Argentina, and very weird, weird stuff like that. That I think, yeah, I don't think that that's, like, what got me into music, but
it's a memory. It's a memory. And you know what? Yeah. At least she was doing it. She might have been singing along with somebody, but she was singing. Where was this?
I was living, my dad was in the military at the time. We lived on a military base called Vandenberg in Lompoc, California. It's actually the federal prison.
Right. And also they launch rockets and stuff.
Yeah. So I actually did get to see a few, they were rockets. Yeah, I was a kid, so I didn't really get it, but I did go to some of those events with my dad, and but my dad's definitely more into, like, rock and roll. You know, my dad introduced me to, like, the Beastie Boys and Iron Maiden and Black Sabbath and Pink Floyd.
Was he a listener or a player or both?
He had a band. He had a band. I never heard any of their music. He claims that he gave the tapes that he recorded to his ex-girlfriend and he wishes he had them, but I never actually heard his music.
What did he play?
He played guitar, actually.
And was there a guitar in the pad with you growing up?
Yeah, there is. That's definitely, a big reason why I started playing stringed instruments. So yeah, he had a ton of guitars actually. He had an acoustic, he had some bootleg pedals from Korea that he would get and some bootleg guitars and keyboards. So we actually did have like a lot of instruments around the house.
Did you jump on?
I did, yeah. I played the keyboard for a while. I did band class. I played in the drum line.
Ah, marching band, okay.
Yeah, so I played in the marching band, and that was like, and I played percussion in an orchestra when I was in Germany. So that was kind of my first educational experience with music was the orchestra and the marching band. I came to Texas because that's where I'm from. That's where I was born, and that's where my family is. So I got there. I auditioned. They made me audition for the band, and I went from being like section leader where at my other school to where this guy had me sight read something in like 7, and I was not never good at sight reading, so that was kind of my negative music teacher experience.
7 sounds like some Captain Beefheart.
Yeah, he was a big turd. I think my uncle actually had him as a band instructor, and he was a big turd to my uncle too.
Ah, maybe he's consistent behavior. You know, can I tell you a song that's in 5? That's pretty popular.
Yeah.
Money.
Oh.
Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
Is it Money 7?
Well, what they did was they made the bass lick just 5 beats. So there's no holes, so it's kind of easy to play. Red boom, bam, ba da, boom, boom. Bum, 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 bum. You know, if you fill up all the holes. Anyway, look, I've had to. I played with some people that tied signature can get rough, man. It can get rough and make you sweat.
But
did you do the garage band like Alex thing did?
We never left the garage. I played. I had one friend who wanted to play music with me. And at the time I was playing drums, he wanted to play drums, and I thought, oh, this would be a cool time for me to play guitar. I've always wanted to play like melodic stuff. So he actually got really good at drums, and I started playing guitar, but we just did like bad metal. wasn't really that good. I didn't actually start performing until I was like 17, and I got asked to, I was throwing a lot of like punk rock shows in the alleyway at this punk house I lived at, and I would DJ them. So I started actually getting asked to like DJ. So I did that for a few years. And then I went to Austin and did some more like electronic music. That's kind of what I studied in school. I met a really great mentor out there. The first good music teacher I had named Mason Wiley. And he was really cool. He showed me a lot of really cool music, and so I finally found my pack when I went to Austin.
When did you jump on the bass?
Honestly, not very much before joining Sprain. I had played in it. I like playing bass. I always liked playing guitar. I definitely always felt like I was more rhythmically oriented than I was, like, writing melodies and good chord progressions.
You're saying bass is more like drums and guitar is?
Yeah, I just felt like bass made more sense to me. So when I came to California, I played with some friends. You know, we played some, like, punk covers. And then Ulrich Krieger, who kind of like mentored Alex and I at different times, he plays saxophone. He's played with like Lou Reed and Lee Ronaldo. He's a really great musician and composer. And he like, even though I play synthesizer at the time primarily, he really needed a bassist for this metal orchestra. So I played in that, and Alex went to one of those shows.
A metal orchestra.
Yeah, it is cool. He wrote.
I remember there was a Deep Purple record where they played with an orchestra in the late 60s. But this was an orchestra set up to play heavy metal music?
Yeah, it was. It was wild. We had like, you know, at least like 7 guitar players. We had bassoons. We had cello.
Oh,
we had everything. So, yeah, Ulrich, I think he's still working on the recordings. Like, it's from a long time ago, but eventually he's going to piece this together and release it.
You ever hear of Glenn Branca?
Yeah.
Yeah, Glenn Branca.
I was in a piece. He did Hallucination City, his 13th symphony here, SoCal. And there were 64 guitar, 20 basses, and 1 drummer. I sat next to the drummer. And I think the guitar guys all had B strings.
That's amazing.
It was at the Disney Music, you know, with the exploding French fry organ thing. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, did you guys get to perform? You said Ulrich is still working on the tape, so you guys recorded, but did you do gigs?
We didn't. We only did a few performances at the school. That's, we met him because I was studying with him. And so we only actually did that. We never got to take it beyond that. There's so many musicians in that.
Right, but you said Alex saw a performance or something.
Yeah,
I was coming up on acid, and I watched April do this performance, and that's when I decided, hey, maybe we should try and play music.
Did you think of the band name right away?
No, band name, it came, it was hard.
He texted me for a few weeks, just sending me, like, one-word names, and I was like, sure, like, I kind of thought, I mean, Alex doesn't like it when I say this, but, I mean, I'm just not that experienced of a bassist. And in a city like LA, there's just so many people that could probably do it. So I was like, yeah, whatever you think. Like, I kind of just thought I'd be here until he found, you know, an actual basis. But so Alex came up with the name.
It's a great thing about, we're at the end of the first hour, but I'll tell you my theory about why somebody brand new to bass can be great at it. We're at the end of August 9th, not in August, October 9th. 2020 Dish Wap Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour two. October 9, 2020. It's the second hour of the Watch for Pedro Show.
There's a teddy bear sitting on the back porch of an old abandoned house just down the way. You see him staring so wistful at the overgrown backyard day after day after day. This little bear, you see, is oh so sad, 'cause the child who used to play with him is gone. The daytimes are lonely and the nighttimes are cold. He shivers on the porch from dusk till dawn. 'Cause life just isn't fair. You can talk about your problems and what nobody cares. Then you'll catch a break, but that's so rare. The simple fact is, life just isn't fair. No, no, no. Now the teddy bear tries to be brave. Is coming back for sure. 'Cause without that kind of thinking, without that kind of faith, life would be too much to endure. 'Cause hope is a powerful engine. Hope is everything, don't you see? Hope is what keeps that little bear hanging on. Ain't that the same way, my friend? For you and me, 'cause life just isn't fair. You can talk about your problems, but won't nobody care. Every now and then you'll catch a break, but that's so rare. Simple fact is, life just isn't fair. No, it's true. Life is fair. That's all you can say. Those happy Hollywood endings, real life doesn't work that way.
D-I-S-M-I-S-S-E-N-T. 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 Your opinion carries no weight, so do not be perplexed. Your boss doesn't love you, they just want the sex. You're but a pawn in a political display. You're the tagline of a larger story. D-I-S-M-I-S-S-E-N-D. 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 D like a dog lying in dirt. I am on a team and this shouldn't hurt. S is in smile like everything's great. M by a mile just so far away. I for the matter settled internally. S like we all just slither away. S like it smarts.
D-I-S-M-I-S-S-E-N-D. D-I-S-M-I-S-S-E-N-D. D-I-S-M-I-S-S-E-N-D.
D&D.
Watt for Pedro show. Started off the second hour with Sprain doing Worship House. Maybe different than the punk house you grew up in, April. Now, here's my theory about... Well, let me tell you what we played after that with Sam Bennett with Life Just Ain't Fair. Just Isn't Fair. This guy speaks good English. Samuel Locke Ward with D-I-S-M-I-S-S-E-D. Control Your Crime from Peace Creep. A Blue Coop, that's a bass man from Blue Oyster Cult. Bass man from Alice Cooper with the drummer of Blue Oyster Cult. Like, right? Blue Coop, like Blue Oyster Cult, Alice Cooper. Yeah. And then Spraying with Snowin', which is total California, SoCal. Not really. Probably more in Idaho. On the prairie there, I've been caught in some snow. Actually, on the east side of the state, trying to get in to Montana, come up through Idaho Falls, I was smelling so much asbestos from the truck, the brake line and from the trucks. I called the promoter, I'll come back next spring because, well, I brushed up, you know, the boat was flipping around, so I brushed off the powder, and it was about 9 inches to the asphalt. It was like a huge, thick thing of ice. So, yeah, I ran away. He called me a coward and shit.
Aww.
I've got a way to work bass another day. Anyway, the thing about bass is, the more notes you play, the smaller you get. So it's always a search for the right notes. So when you're just learning, you're playing fewer notes and you can actually make that. Stanley Clark, I just read somewhere, anybody can do a bass solo. It's really hard to write a good bass line. And that's because of the physics. The wavelengths are so big. And you know humans, the more they do something, the more and more of it they do. So we actually shoot ourselves in the foot. And so that's why somebody just starting on bass can really do a great bass line. Who was the lady in the Talking Heads? I think she learned on the job and her really good parts. Paul McCartney had to switch over, right, when the guy quit. And don't knock it. The bass is it's still finding itself. I mean, we all owe James Jamerson, but all of us can contribute, so don't worry about April. You weren't. You felt like you were like a place marker in the book of Alex Rock. No.
No, don't.
I didn't.
Let's not do that narrative. That's not true at all.
Okay. No, Alex has always been super cool to play with. It ended up working out much more long term in comparison to me playing with other.
Well, let's talk about the band getting together. So you two were the first two members because you end up with four people, right?
Yeah.
So what happens?
So Alex just had, like, he'd been recording a lot of music on his own. He already had, like, the EP he had already written for the most part. I came in and did a few things, but for the most part, it was already good to go. I started helping because I primarily am an audio engineer. So, like, we didn't really plan for me to do vocals on the EP. It just sort of ended up happening. Just to add more to already like a simple idea. So that's kind of how it started, but we both.
So it was kind of a recording project before you ever did a gig? Are you saying that?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
So when did you get the other two cats?
When we started getting gigs.
Makes sense. What was the first Spraying gig like?
Horrible. It was a mess.
Okay.
we played with another drummer and we didn't get along super well musically. So we ended up playing with them for a while, but we parted ways. And those gigs are very different from the ones we play now because now things are pretty well rehearsed and the songs are, you know, a lot more ambitious and
you're saying that first gig was like not enough practice?
Yeah, I was just like, yeah, we're playing so slowly.
What was the first gig? Was it at CIA?
Yeah, it might have been at the CIA.
I think that was their first show.
Yeah, but it was like, it was kind of like a, you know, it was Who's a band's first gig? We weren't one of the bands who was like, all right, we're going to practice for a year and then we're going to play shows. We were like, all right, we got a couple songs. Let's do it. Let's play a show.
Balls out. Alex, I ask everybody this because I'm always interested. My first gigs were fucking pants shitters. I choked like a big dog. So I want to play anything here.
Thank you. I know to understand. extra, extra, read all about it, something extra.
You can call me anytime. When I disconnect the line to visit shadows of someone kind, yeah, I'm here.
Thank you. is just a lesson learned. Don't look, cause you'll go blind. Taste the dust you just got left behind.
Yeah.
Pedro show. Here we go. Spraying with anything. Then Jim Q, something extra. Grex with Gone. Grex is people from the Philippines. Great guitar man. He lives up in that town. Yeah. His name's Carl Evangelista. Yeah, incredible cat. She's an organism. A Pussycat and the Dirty Johnsons from England. Aloha Screwdriver, they were on the show last month. They're from Oaktown, Surfing Soviet. And Bullets Over Balloons, Offensive Words. Now, these guys are Spokanistan. So sometimes I will play there right on the way to Boise between Seattle. So there is a kind of a way station, but still Boise is the main connect between Salt Lake and the Northwest. So people, if you're always wondering why I'm always playing every tour, look at a fucking map. So so you had to switch out drummers. But isn't there another cat? Is it a four-piece?
Yeah, Alex. Alex Simmons plays extra guitar. And I think that when the band, like on that first EP, you know, you've been playing some of the stuff off that first EP. It kind of sounded a little bit more like that. It was like a little bit like we're still kind of finding what we could do as a band. But then, you know, the record that just came out is kind of like a demonstration of us like incorporating these other two members, Max Pretzer on drums and Alexander Simmons on guitar. So there's a lot more like guitar interplay, and the drums are you know, there's a lot that Max is doing on the drums that we couldn't do before, especially in regards to how slowly he can play and how you know, how much stamina he has. He can play big, like 15-minute long songs if we need him to.
But that's interesting because people don't realize that playing slow is actually difficult to keep it grooving, right?
Yeah, it's way harder than playing fast.
Yeah. I've tried to tell people that. Why do you think jazz fusions go to a million miles an hour? You can't hear the clamps. I'm curious too about the material, because like April was saying, the first stuff you developed all on your own, and then you showed it to the. Were these cats involved a little more?
Yeah, it was a lot more of a group project. It's usually like, I usually say that I have the impetus to like come up with a part or two, and then we are all arrange it together, and it becomes something that doesn't resemble initially what I had thought of or how I wanted something to sound, but it becomes something manifested physically as you know, a group project, and that's where the real art of it is, and that's where the collaboration is. So all those songs are very collaborative, and they're all written, you know, everyone writes their own parts for the most part, and but they're all kind of based around a singular idea or two that one person brings in to the space.
You're saying you provide like the launch pad, the springboard.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
So you haven't really realized it's just something that everybody can like get on board and start riding. Yeah, okay. That's a lot of how I compose. Even though I do it on the bass, I never want it realized, because when you bring the other cats in, they got ideas, right?
Yeah.
Now, some people compose on the guitar or the keyboard, right? Because all harmonically, you can really set up the song, but by using the bass guitar, it's kind of empty. Some guys, it's too much for them. Like, what the fuck? Why not write it on the cymbals or a kick drum? But other cats like Nels, they're like, man, because it's freedom, right? It's a lot of open space. So for the other Alex here, that's another interesting thing, too, with the two guitars. You know, counterpoint, or do you, like, you know, jump on the same thing? Or
yeah, I think when we write
out that dialogue,
those guitar parts are very, like, I feel like they're very, like, we're trying to, the thing we say when we're writing together is make it sound like one part that's impossible to play by one person. So they're often like kind of like interwoven parts that complement each other, but they don't take away from each other. Like we like that band Polvo a lot.
Oh yeah,
the way those guys like write their guitar parts has been really inspiring.
I remember
too.
Those cats.
Yeah.
What was his name? Ash Bowie.
Yeah, Ash Bowie.
I did some gigs with them. Man, we're talking like 25. Oh, they got back together though. But they're from a while ago. Seemed like they had a lot of sonic youth influence.
Yeah.
Good guys, good guys. I think Povel's actually a disease that dogs get, like mange.
I thought it meant octopus or sex in Spanish and Portuguese.
Popo. Espanol. Octopus, right. Popo. We're at the end of the second hour, October 9, 2020 edition. Bob Peters, our special guest, Frank. We'll take round three. October 9, 2020. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro show.
I do my part by not killing spiders. I'm entertained by the drawing of pain, which is after kisses from strangers. My ego crushes all my good intentions. The amount of people born and dying each day should make you question your importance. And after all the stupid tasks of each and every day, I get rewarded by having time. Smile, and for a while I will forget.
music or 90s underground hardcore rock or whatever.
Simmons was saying they take a lot of inspiration from Gamelan.
Yeah.
Gamelan.
Which, yeah, it's like it's a traditional music that comes from Indonesia.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's kind of a bells with notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful stuff. I should tell people we started third hour off of Deliver Us. And this is one of your big kind of symphonic babies. And then we had Crane do Joke That Comes a Lot. Something like, you know, Deliver Us. And then, yeah, My Way Out. And this is like more contemporary of you guys, right?
As in recent, like our most recent stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the Deliver Us song, that song's off the old EP from 2018, but I think that song's like the one that kind of hints towards the new direction the most.
Yeah, it's like the gateway drug.
Yeah, and My Way Out is off our most recent LP. It came out in September.
Okay, my timeline, old being 2018, okay. Well, what about the new record? When was it recorded?
It was recorded over the period of about 4 or 5 months from 2019.
I didn't make myself clear. Where?
Where? The Cave. Our friend Josiah recorded it.
Where's the Cave?
It's like off San Fernando, close to Atwater area.
Yeah, it's very close to Atwater, off San Fernando, right by Fletcher Street. I used to live down there, so I kind of know the area pretty well. But yeah, he's got this like little practice space converted into a studio kind of vibe, and really cool guy, nicest guy in the world. So
definitely the nicest person.
Was he a big part of the recording, like producer kind of dude?
He didn't really produce, but he was incredibly flexible. Like, we have tons of guitar noise stuff, and he just sat through it with a smile. And, like, I feel like the band sort of produced it together, mainly Alex. But Josiah was really, really, really flexible. He wanted to just do what we wanted. So I think that was a really great thing about working with him.
Yeah.
And did you go into the studio with more stuff than you needed?
Yes, actually. We recorded a song that didn't make the album because it won't fit on a LP. But it was still good. It worked out. Like, I feel like...
You gotta let people know about that because there's kind of limit. If you go over 20 minutes on a side, the bass really suffers.
Yeah, totally. So we can't have that.
Yeah. That's right. But... there's nothing like the way a vinyl sounds, but people got to understand they're not exactly like CDs. You can't really go over 20 minutes. And with the 7-inch, you can't really go over 4 minutes without really the bass taking a hit because people don't realize it, but the up and down is actually the stereo. The left and right is the amplitude, you know, the loudness. And that's why when you're mastering, they actually mono the bass 100 hertz and down, so you're not asking the stylus to do all kinds of trippy-ass calisthenics. Mm-hmm. So you guys have more than enough. I want to play My Way Out. Thank you. Talk to Pedro show. Last music for this edition, My Way Out from Spain. And the Galextasy from out in the Joshua Tree. Heaven Channel, Season 2, Album 8, Part 2. Actually, in this lockdown, quick quarantino since March, 18 albums. So I want to hear anybody talking about how they're bored, man. Get composing and recording, people. That's one good thing about these days, you know. It's not all bad new days. We can record really much more econo than the old days and quicker. And so tell me about these songs, My Way Out and everything.
Those are my favorite on the new record for sure. I really think that Alex's vocal performance on My Way Out, like, we went outside to smoke some weed. We were like, your problem, you're doing vocals later. We came back in and I was just super high, and I just started laughing when I heard the vocal take. Like, he did it so quickly, and it was like, to me, I thought it was like brilliant. So I was just laughing, like, because I thought it was just so good. That was my reaction to it.
You know, sometimes if you just let the freak flag fly, that's what happens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't overthink it and stuff. Where can people find you guys on the internet?
We're everywhere on the internet, unfortunately.
Well, do you have your own? Do you have your own website?
We don't. We just have Bandcamp. We're just brain.bandcamp. We have.
But down the road, you're going to get your own website, right? Because that's like having your own fucking fanzine.
Yeah, I like. I mean, I have my own website. For my own stuff, but yeah, I've been wanting to get one for spring.
I'm not saying it's wrong to put like flyers up on other people's telephone poles, but when you have a place where there's no gatekeeper, you know, no filter.
Yeah, that was how it was before the internet sucked. Everyone used to just have their own website before they had to have a Facebook or had to have Instagram.
Yeah, well, I still think it's a good thing, because to me it's an analogy to the fanzine. Of course, you can find Spraying at the Flenser website. That's THEFLENSER.com. Great label. Lots of good music there. What about, you said you had one song. Was it a big one that was left over?
It wasn't that long of a song, but it just didn't really fit the style. It was actually supposed to go on the first EP that we put out, and it should have been on that EP, and it just didn't fit this new record, so it seemed appropriate to just.
Well, right now, no gigs, so are you guys planning on recording some more?
I hope so. We have a fair amount of new material, maybe almost a whole new record.
Wow.
Yeah, we've been writing a lot, and we've been talking about, record's not done, but we've been talking about getting in the studio because, you know, like I think with the last record we did, As Lost Through Collision, with that record, a lot of those songs had kind of incubated for such a long period that when we went into the studio, tiny bit of like the energy or the fire from like getting excited about new stuff and writing new stuff was gone. And I felt like that kind of like translated into the recordings a bit too much for my liking. So I think that, you know, while these songs are kind of fresh and just ready to go, we might as well record them. No concrete plans yet, but we'll get there.
Yeah, well, when you do, when you come back on the show, we can play it and talk about it.
Yeah,
of course. I'd love to come back.
Yeah, that would be bitching. I mean, because, like I said, in the meantime, there's no gigs, but who knows, maybe soon. But there's nothing like you know, in the old days, we made recordings to get people to come to gigs. They were like part of the flyers. But now I look at them as, no, those are works. Because when you're gone, you know, they're like your little tombstones. So, yeah, a whole different thing when I was first doing this kind of thing. So I'm really curious, and I'm really honored to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
And the honor is all ours. Thank you so much for having us.
And also, I love the way, you know, your sound is uncompromising. Thank you for doing that, because We need bold motherfuckers. We need fear. Maybe that sounds belligerent, but we need fiercely inventive people, I think, right now.
Well, thank you, Mike. That really means a lot coming from you. Appreciate it, and thank you for having us on your show. It's been a true honor.
Right back. People, it's been the October 9, 2020 edition of WAP Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.